This is Sam. Before we start the show, just a quick note that after we recorded the show, the Supreme Court released some important opinions that are of note. We'll talk about them next week because they hadn't happened yet when we recorded the show. Anyway, here comes the show. Welcome to Curmudgeon's Corner for Thursday, June 25th, 2015. I'm Sam Minter. Yvonne Bo is here yet again. Hello, Yvonne.
Hello. Hi. How are we going?
We're doing okay. You know, and our main topics for today, just to get this right out there for everybody, we are going to talk about election 2016. We got another couple candidates, some polls, some other stuff like that to talk about. We're going to talk about Greece and the situation in Greece.
It's not the movie. Okay. All right.
The movie. The country. Yeah. Okay.
Clarify that. You know, could be confusion.
There could be. We'll talk about the situation there. It's been a while since we've talked about it, and apparently it's getting worse, better, whatever, you know? And finally, we're going to talk a little bit about the aftermath of the Charleston killings. Last week, obviously, we talked about the event itself, but there's been a lot going on in the last week in terms of various reaction to all that. A couple things I wanted to mention in our little starting segment before we get all to the real stuff. First of all, I just wanted to mention that just a few hours ago as we're recording this, we had the 100th like on our Facebook page. So,
oh, yes, we had over 100 likes. That's right.
So I mean,
probably a whole bunch of like crackheads or something or whatever did it. But, you know,
I appreciate every one of our likes. And, you know, 100 likes isn't all that much in the grand scheme of things. We're not.
Well, for us, it is.
For us, it is. But, you know, I did want to ask this question. I texted Yvonne about this, a little earlier. But the one thing that is like sort of baffling me just because, and I want somebody to explain this to me because I honestly don't understand. As a Facebook user, because you know, I see all these stats. I see people liking the individual posts we do announcing episodes. I see people liking the page itself. But you know, as the administrator of the website that hosts our podcast, I see very few of these translating into either views of the page or listens to the podcast episode. And by the way, I'm not like complaining about click through or anything like that. Like I fully understand if someone like sees the little ad or whatever and decides, I'm not interested in this. I'm not going to do this.
They could be just liking our picture.
Yeah. Well, that's exactly my question. Like, cause for me, like if I see an ad for a podcast in Facebook, first of all, I'm probably not going to click it. Okay. But you know,
but, like, you and I are very stingy with our clicks.
We're very stingy with our, honestly, I have seen ads for podcasts, potentially, in various places.
Hell, I haven't even liked ads for podcasts of that stuff that I actually like.
Well, here's what I was about to say. Like, I wouldn't click through it. I wouldn't like it. But if it looked interesting, I would pick up my phone and subscribe to it, and you know, which would potentially result in a download or a hit somewhere. Now, but like what I'm not understanding, and for anybody who is actually listening to us on this show, I am not talking about you here because
you guys are listening.
Right. You know, I'm talking about like what brings somebody to see the ad for this podcast, not click through to the page with more information. All they see is the picture of Yvonne and I with a little note that it's a podcast about current events. That's it. And they don't.
We look pretty sexy on that picture. I mean,
But you know, and they just hit like.
Yes.
But without like actually checking it out and seeing, well, what did they actually talk about this week? Or maybe I should listen to it. And if I like it, then I'll hit like.
Details.
I mean, I appreciate these likes. Don't get me wrong. They help increase our reach. If nothing else, like when we boost the post to like, you know, people who like the page and their friends, it gets us more people. So I appreciate these, but I just don't. And like even on the individual episodes, you know, I see people liking the individual episodes and I'm like, okay, they're liking the individual episode. That's cool. But absolutely no evidence that these people are actually listening to the episode.
You're getting caught up in all these details.
Now, in a few of these cases, it's people that either Yvonne or I know. Now, in those cases, I kind of understand. They're just like, oh, I'll be supportive. I like Yvonne. I like Sam.
Be an athletic supporter. Yes.
Okay. I may not actually listen to their podcast, but I'm supportive of the fact they're doing an endeavor.
Yes. So a number of those have been, yes.
Yeah. Yep. So I understand. I actually do understand.
I totally understand.
But when they're completely strangers. About
totally random people who we have no idea who they are, and they are liking our podcast, and it's very obvious or low likelihood that they ever listen to it.
Well, you know, I don't know. I mean, some of these people might, but I'm like, what I'll do is like, I can see, you know, well, someone just
like, here's the weird thing.
Yes,
we've gotten downloads in far, very far away places. For example,
we have occasionally.
But you know, the thing is that I have not seen some of those downloads translate into actual likes.
Well, that's true in the opposite direction too, but right. I can understand that. I mean, someone listens to the show and they're only listened to it once. They may only listen to the first 5 minutes and then they're out.
They're idiots. We were idiots, which, you know, good conclusion. Yes.
Yeah, okay. And so they don't like that. You know.
Right.
Okay, yep. So I understand that. The ones that are confusing me are the ones who are obviously liking it without actually knowing anything about it other than the picture of me and Yvonne.
Aha. Well,
or maybe in the case of the individual episodes, they also see our topics. And I'm like, okay, they liked our topics. But anyway, again, for any of you listening, even if you came through the Facebook ad, we're obviously not talking about you because you clicked through and you listened.
Because you're listening.
And so that's awesome. It's the ones that I just don't get are the ones who are just, oh, yeah, I guess what? I keep speculating. Do they think hitting the like button is how they get the ad to go away? Because that's not actually how it works.
Okay, well, obviously, they're not listening, so we don't know.
We don't know.
Well, you know, like I said, I think that we just like the picture.
Yeah, it's probably they like the picture. Yeah.
Like, oh, look at the guys. Oh, look, that's a nice picture. I like it. That's it. There you go.
I guess. I don't know. It baffles me.
Well, but a lot of things baffle you. So anyway.
That is true. I am very baffled. I am baffled all the time.
Yes.
And I guess we've been long enough on this intro, unless you wanted to put something in real quick before we jump into the
Here's
things.
A question I've got. Yeah. Okay. If you get an email from somebody looking to be hired. Okay. All right.
Okay. Yes.
And they have problems with like spelling certain words.
Right.
And it's not very articulate. Do you really even consider it a person?
Well, I guess it would depend what the job was. Like if speech and spelling and writing were not job requirements.
The job.
What?
Very important to the job.
Oh, then absolutely not. Then I'd be done.
Okay. Yeah.
If I was hiring someone to, you know, build a brick wall in my backyard.
Well, yes, I might not. Yes, exactly. Like, correct. Yeah. I could see that. Yes. Obviously.
But no, if I was hiring someone where a major portion of their job was going to be writing and articulating things and then, you know, the sample, you know, when they were just communicating with me, it was all garbled and incoherent. Yeah,
first of all, you know, here's two things. If you're applying for a job, okay, if you send an email and you obviously apparently did not understand the job at all. And when I know it's pretty clearly written, because there are job descriptions I've seen out there that are just very vague. We've all seen these. It's a generic job description. Job gets posted. You look at it. You have no idea what the hell it's for. I mean, you're applying and basically you're throwing a dart at a board. But, you know, for this case, not the case. Okay, pretty clear, pretty out there. Okay, and I mean, that where he's missing it, it's not even a job description. He's sending me the wrong job title. This guy apparently is one of those guys that likes to like apply to every job listed. So he saw this job listed. And I guess he was, so he mixed and matched from like two different things. So it was just a jumble of stuff. Mm. And then it was misspelled. So I was just kind of like, well, I'm not really impressed by this. Can I be honest?
I mean, I'll be honest here. If it was just like, if it was like one little typo or misspelling somewhere, I wouldn't knock him for that. But if it was like riddled through the whole thing to the point where it was distracting, that changes.
And it's just that, yeah, because like one misspelling, you're right. I would probably go with that if it was an articulately written thing. But when the thing was like a traffic accident of writing, and then you add the misspellings, no, not really. Doesn't work too well.
Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah, I'm like, you know, I'm trying to be fair and give people an opportunity, but I'm like, I'm reading this thing and I'm like, really? I mean, I'm like, how do I really consider this person? I mean, anyway.
Again, it's the nature of the job, but if that's a job requirement and you can't do it?
I always try to give everybody a fair shake to get an interview. It's hard. You know, you're out there and, you know, all of you that have searched for a job know how hard it is to get an interview. OK,
yep.
You know, it just is, you know, it's very arduous work. You know, you get in front of somebody and you want to make a good impression. And sometimes, you know, I can understand a misspelling and other stuff. And I can understand sometimes that maybe you're not in your game that moment. And maybe you just wrote a message that was like off, you know, it happens. It happens to everybody, you know, but I think that I'm trying to draw the line where it's, you know, how bad it is. I guess it's gotta be bad.
I mean, one thing you're kind of right. Like if it's a single incident, you know, maybe if you do a back and forth and see if it's replicated.
Right.
If you're after giving them like as much benefit of the doubt as possible, you're like, you know, maybe they woke up early in the morning and they were off their meds and, you know, they banged their head when they woke up, you know, and so they need, you know, they were just bad.
Sometimes you have a bad day.
Sometimes you have a bad day. They were distracted. Something else was going on. So if you want to give the benefit of the doubt, you email back and say, and see what they reply again.
Over 10 years ago, I missed an interview that was scheduled. It was a conference call at 7 in the morning. I overslept through it. Yeah. Now, but understand something. I'm a guy that usually wakes up always on time for that. And I was like very distraught about the fact that I slept through it. I just did not wake up. It happened to be that I kept feeling very tired. And a month and a half later, I went to the doctor to get checked and they found I had mono.
Hmm.
And I was like, shit, well, that explains that. I'm like, Jesus, you know, because I'm not a person to miss something like that just by oversleeping. Okay. Right. And I had been working and I had been feeling extremely tired. I've been drinking coffee like there was no, I mean, I had been drinking coffee like I'd never drank coffee in my life. And then, you know, but I mean, somebody said, dude, you got to go to the doctor. You can't be, you know, it's like, you can't be this tired at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. I mean, you know, it's like, what the hell? I'm like, yeah, I know. It's like just crazy. And, yep, wound up having mono. And I remember that this was for a promotion, so I wound up still working for that person, mm-hmm. just in a different role. And I still work for them, so they, you know, they didn't think I was an idiot. And I'm like, but you know, I wound up, you know, telling them, I'm like, you know, look, you know, that I felt so bad that day I missed the interview. I told, you know, that I just went to the doctor and he told me that I was sick with this. And then, you know, the thing is that I had met them in person, actually kissed them. Do you realize that, you know what? They got it too.
Nice.
So now I don't know if she gave it to me.
So wait. You kissed your boss?
On the cheek.
Okay. So this wasn't a tongue thing.
No. But it could be transmitted that way. I mean, just the context. So yeah, I did that. So there you go. No. I did not go and go and like, you know, do French kiss my boss. No. Good.
Okay. No. Well, on that auspicious note, let's take a break and we'll come back and we'll start out with the latest updates on election 2016. You know, we got a few things going on as we usually do. Back after this. Okay, here we are.
Here we are.
Okay. I was thinking about inserting something else, but no. Let's go straight to the election.
No. What the hell? Anyway, come on. You know,
No. I'll save it for the lightning round.
Save it for the lightning round.
We got okay. So we got election 2016. I guess the Bobby Jindal officially jumped in this week with a really odd video. Did you watch this video?
I did not watch the video, but since I got the Trump juice, you tell me about Jindal's.
So basically, he put like a camera up in a tree and then gathered his family. So he has a couple of small kids. And took a video of him telling his kids that they'd made the decision to run for president. And the way that he officially announced was he put this video up on YouTube and had people look at, and then he gave real speeches and stuff after that. But apparently, like, a major part of this was he just took the video. And it's like a hidden camera video because, like, no one's looking at the camera or anything. It's like the camera's up in a tree pointing down at a table in, like, their yard or something. And so he's like, you know, Mom and I have something to talk to you about. And, you know, we've been thinking really hard about this. And, you know, we've decided to go to run for president. And what do you guys think about that? You know, it means you're going to get to go to Iowa again. I know you like Iowa, you know, that kind of stuff.
Wait, really?
Yes.
Oh boy, that's just ridiculous.
And you know, I saw a whole bunch of, at first I wasn't going to watch the video. And then I saw a whole bunch of people on Twitter saying things like, yeah, no, because that's not creepy at all. You know?
Look, at least he didn't go and insult like a whole bunch of different groups.
Well, yeah. I mean, and then like, from all reports, I did not watch his actual like introducing himself speech. But, you know, apparently he went after Jeb Bush a lot in the announcement. And okay, whatever.
It's just another guy to the bus.
I've heard people describe him in a number of different ways. The least charitable of them was he's kind of like Donald Trump, except without the money.
Honestly, if you recall some of his speeches, yes, they have been that way. I mean, his speeches in general have been terrible. I mean, he's not, you know, is another delusional idiot, you know? So, yeah. Well,
and look, he's running very close to the bottom of the polls. He's another one that, like, you know, we were talking about the debates, the first two debates, the one on CNN and the one on Fox, are both going to take the top 10 in the polls as of the time of the debate. And in both cases, they'll take all the people who are below the top 10 and they'll have a separate little conversation with them, like, earlier in the day or something. But nobody's going to watch that. So he's in that category.
The question is, like, when does the polls, I know they're saying the top 10, but with this many people, this huge a crowd, when do the polls start getting that it becomes so stupidly fragmented because everybody is going to be attacking all these front runners? You've got so much attack that it becomes virtually impossible to really go and like gather. I mean, how are they going to determine the top 10? I mean, is it going to be their poll? Is it a poll of polls? Well, is it going to be?
Apparently, it's. I think both of them have said it's going to be a poll of polls, kind of thing. You know, but even but then, even then, there's a question of which ones count. And
you remember exactly which polls count. And if you remember the last time, okay, with this crazy horde, the people in the polls kept soaring and collapsing. So you could be going through a sequence of debates where some guys get invited to one, and then the next one is a whole other bunch, and then the next one is a whole other bunch.
It could be. These are incredibly volatile. There was one new Fox News poll came out a few hours ago that actually shows Trump in second place at the moment.
Exactly. I mean, the guy was like near the bottom, and now he's in second place.
And you know, they're not. This is why you look at poll averages, not individual polls. Blah blah blah.
But all of
the candidates so far have gotten little bumps after their announcement.
Right.
So Jindal will probably have a little bump in the next poll that comes out. Whoever announces last before we finally get to the first debate probably has a little bit of an advantage if they announce close to then. But you know, it's a mess. I'm looking right now. Real Clear Politics is the one place that has a really good poll average of all the candidates with all the national polls.
So
right now, as of this very moment, including the Fox News poll that just came out, just to make sure, number one, Bush, 13.2%. Number two, Walker at 11%.
Only he's leading with only 13.2%.
Yes.
I mean, is that not the craziest low number ever for a leader?
Number two, Walker at 11.2%. Number three, Rubio at 10.8%. Number four, Carson at 9.5%. And number five, Huckabee at 8.7%. If you keep going down lower than that, you get Paul, then Cruz, then Trump, then Christie, then Perry, then Fiorina, then Santorum, then Kasich, Graham, and then Jindal.
Oh man, this is gonna be a great circus.
So the next one is, of course, and I made a tweet about this, but you know, I can't remember if it was last week or the week before, but we were talking about Christie, and I was saying a few things his family have said have indicated, like, you know, his wife, I believe, said, you know, it doesn't seem like the enthusiasm is there that was a year ago, and he's been doing badly in the polls. And I'm like, my gut is he's not going to run. He's going to realize it's not his time. He's not going to do it this time around.
Maybe. I don't know. What the hell, man, with so many people in there.
But at this point, his camp is saying he's going to officially announce that he's in next week.
I believe he's going to go in, because I'm going to tell you why.
Well, two weeks ago, you agreed with me, but, you know.
Well, I'm changing my mind right now.
At this point, his camp has specifically said he's announcing next week. There's no more mystery. He's in. Do. Actually, not that cut and dried. Turns out that between when we recorded this show and when I'm putting it out, Christie came out and said, hey, those reports that I've made a decision are premature. I haven't actually made a decision yet. So I guess we'll see on Christie. Do.
Well, it's I don't. Here's the thing. Right now, I don't see why anybody would say we're out.
Right. Because I mean, all kinds of crazy stuff could happen.
Exactly.
You know, I know we talked about this week, but come on, Romney. It's time to get back in.
And I don't know. And I like, you see, this is one thing I did. You see, I like that there's this draft Romney page in Facebook.
Yes,
okay?
I know. You liked it.
And I liked it. And I have been getting, wow, what a stream of updates of all these people that are really, 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 really wanting to draft Romney. Wow. I mean, it's just a daily barrage. So, I mean, shit, why not? Hell, Romney, baby.
Oh, yeah. So just another thing on this Real Clear Politics average, just looking at who had the lead going back. It looks like this their graph started just about, I don't know, last summer sometime. So the people who have had the lead at some point in this chart, Christie, Paul, then Christie again, then Huckabee, then Paul, then Christie again, then Paul, then Bush, then Walker, then Bush again. And it looks like Bush has held it for about a month now, a little over a month now. So the lead has gone back and forth a couple times. Yeah,
exactly. So why?
And look, if you look at this graph, it's just a jumbled mess of lines.
Listen, if there was a moment that you wanted to jump in, I got to say, what better time than this? Honestly, with this mess.
Yeah,
I really do.
And has Perry officially announced yet?
I thought he did.
And Kasich, I think, you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
So and yeah, we mentioned Lindsey Graham a couple weeks ago. You know, I forget at this point which one's official and which one's just in the I'm thinking about it, but really I am stage. But I mean, this whole list, 4, 8, 15. We got 15 of these guys.
Well, when are we gonna? Where are we gonna sign up for this thing? Or announce?
Well, you know, I in a couple shows ago when we were talking a few shows ago when we were talking about how many candidates there were, you probably didn't go back and listen. I went back and edited to because we had talked about how many active candidates there were, and I went back and added a little bit to the show with the URLs where you could actually see that and the URLs where you could submit your. President,
I went to that URL and I saw that. Yeah,
it doesn't look like there's a cost, so go for it. Run for president, Yvonne.
Why don't you and me both sign up?
So we're gonna run against each other,
baby.
There you go.
That would be interesting.
And any other interesting developments? We mentioned Trump being in second place in the stupid Fox News poll. The Fox News poll has Bush at 15%, Trump at 11%, and then next is Carson at 10%, and then Paul at
9%. Obviously, you know, Trump got a boost from
Paul and Walker
his,
tied at 9.
From his, you know, from the fact that he just announced, I'm pretty sure that a lot of those people just you know, on the poll, just, oh, yeah, Trump. Yeah. He announced. Yeah, sure. Yeah, I'll vote for Trump. What the hell, right? Why not?
By the way, I'll point out there's also a Monmouth poll that came out earlier this month that had Carson in the lead.
Well, there you go. Well, that's, you know, there you go. Add that to the mix. it's going to be fun.
Oh, and we should mention on the Democratic side, everybody.
What about Newt?
Newt's too busy reviewing the iWatch. The Apple Watch.
Oh, come on. He can jump in, too. That would be a lot of fun.
He likes zoos.
He was a lot of fun the last time. I mean, I got to be honest.
No,
I
admit he was fun, you know, and we know when your favorite Carly Fiorina ran for Senate, she had some good commercials too, the one with the demon sheep and all.
Oh yes, I forgot about the demon sheep. Yes,
but you know, look, on the Democratic side, real quick, before we move on from this topic, you know, of course, Hillary's still got the humongous lead. But there's been a lot of press in the last couple of weeks that Sanders has been doing a lot better than people expected. And so far, he is kind of emerging as the anti-Hillary. He's the one, you know, all of the left progressive types are getting really excited about him. I mentioned a few weeks ago how I was surprised at how much excitement there was just on my Facebook feed from people on the left side of the spectrum posting updates. You know, he's not going to win. But he's good enough in the polls that at this point, Hillary
would have to debate. He's going to have to debate.
Yeah, Hillary would look really bad at this point to decline having a debate with Bernie Sanders. And so she's going to have to go through that exercise. And then it's going to be sort of that tightrope where on the one hand, she wants to look good next to him. On the other hand, she doesn't want to look like she's beating him up either or discounting him. And at the same time, she knows that a lot of what he has to say really appeals to her base. And so she's going to have to, at least to some degree, move towards him on a bunch of issues and say, you know, Bernie, you're right about that one, and I agree, but I'm a better person to get that to happen.
Well, let's just say that for the latest poll average.
And that may hurt her in the general.
That may. But look, she's got a 50-point lead. Okay, that's the average. Yes. Let's be a reality. It's a 50-point lead.
Yeah, it's the same Real Clear Politics average that we were talking about for the Republicans has Clinton at 62.4% compared to Sanders at 12.3%, and Biden, if he decides to run, at 12%.
Right.
And then everybody else.
I mean, Biden's not running, and he's got the same numbers as Sanders, who's officially running.
Yes.
Okay. I mean, you know, really? So, yeah, look.
Yeah, this is important.
I mean, Hillary just needs, this is the only thing she has to do. She has to manage it gracefully.
Yes.
That's all she has to do.
Exactly.
Okay? If she's a jerk, then it will backfire massively. But if she's graceful about it, it just, you know, whatever, then she'll be fine. Okay?
Agreed. Agreed. That is the bottom line here. Hillary has to, I think she has to be graceful. But also, she has to come off looking significantly better than Sanders.
You know, I don't think she has to come up looking significantly better than Sanders. But I think she probably has to be empathetic.
Yes.
To the people that are pushing for Sanders, and like at least like provide some empathy towards their.
She can't blow him off.
Exactly. She just can't blow him off.
She can't blow him off. She can't be an asshole to him. And she has to take his subjects seriously. Like when he's talking about, you know, income inequality or, the corporate control over American politics or the influence of money in politics, whatever, all of these kinds of things, she has to take the issues seriously. And not, she can't dismiss him and she can't dismiss his issues. Either one of those things would hurt her. I agree. She doesn't have to like blow him away on the stage, but if she screws up and he actually looks better, he does a better job answering questions, he appears more knowledgeable, anything like that, then that's going to hurt.
Right.
So, you know, she has to, you know, and I don't think this is necessarily a really hard job for her. I mean, you know, Sanders is the classic crotchety old man. You know, she can look, she just has to come off being professional, like she knows what she's doing. And, you know, she does.
Right.
You know, but it's also, you got to remember that if for a lot of these, I was going to generalize to a lot of politicians, but specifically for Hillary Clinton, it's been a long time since she's done this. Even when she did this before, if you remember 2008, one of the things that hurt her in 2008 was that in the debates, she came off looking entitled and arrogant. She came off looking like, this is my nomination. How dare you challenge me for it? And she has to not let that happen this time, you know, she has the reputation of being somewhat cold in these things, not showing sort of the warmth to the American people. And this is one of the things that Obama was really good at and her husband is really good at. But she has not shown a lot of skill for whereas she's incredibly adept on, issues and positions and what she would do in this situation and what she'd do in that situation. But when it comes to, you know, I feel your pain, to quote her husband, she's not great at that.
Well, but Yeah. Ah, look, I think she'll be fine.
I think she'll be fine too. I think.
She has to just completely just do a massive fuck up.
Look, I don't think that. I think if you want to put odds on her getting the nomination,
I'd say 95% right now. 98%.
I was gonna go between 90 and 95, and the percentage that isn't her is not like Bernie Sanders blowing her away at the debate. It's, you know, something happens to her health, or she does something stupid and self-destructive on her own. I think she is in a position where, you know, look, Bernie's wildest dreams here, he's not going to win the nomination because he blows away Hillary Clinton. His wildest dreams are she has to say a bunch of things about her issues, and maybe he goes from, 12% to 20%. But Hillary still wins. Hillary right. still completely dominates. Maybe in the most optimistic scenario for Bernie Sanders, he wins a couple states in the primary process.
Right.
And that's like wildly optimistic. I think
that is superly wild.
He might actually, to be fair, he might actually have a good shot in New Hampshire, which of course is an early state, so it matters. But because he's from Vermont, right next door, he's actually polling fairly well in New Hampshire right now. The margin is much less. I think it's down to like 10 points or something in New Hampshire as compared to these national polls. But, you know, New Hampshire in the end is small. And, you know, Hillary would be able to brush that back, Hillary will win in the end, absent something that stops her that comes from her, not from outside. Sanders could make it, a bit more of a ride than she would like to have. That's only in the Sanders wildly optimistic scenario. In the sort of expected Sanders scenario, she does exactly what you said. She goes to the debates and she's polite and, acknowledges him, but still dominates him and comes out of the debate with nothing changed. And that's it. And then she's the nominee, and folks like Biden, Biden could surprise us all and just decide, hell, I'm running. But again, my gut feeling is that he only does that if she looks damaged.
Right. Actually, I don't think he's going to run regardless of what the hell happens at this point. I really don't.
Mm. Yeah. I give it a, if she was looking heavily damaged, I give it some chance, but
she would have to be like, I don't know. It would be like either she did something politically crazy or some physical ailment.
Look, Hillary's in the 60-some percentile in the national polls for the Democratic nomination right now. If she drops below 40, then she has to worry about other people jumping in, like Biden, but maybe other folks too. Kerry could jump in or maybe Warren reconsiders or something. But she has to go from the 60s. I think down to the 40s before even anybody even seriously thinks about it. And for people to think about it seriously, maybe she has to drop into the 30s. And that's going to be really hard with these numbers. I mean, the number we haven't looked at is the undecideds. But right now, I mean, there aren't that many of those. Most people are like, yep, it's Hillary. As we said last week, look, this thing's going to end up as Bush versus Clinton. We're going to have a lot of fun getting there, but it's going to end up as Bush versus
Clinton. I have serious doubts about Bush getting there. I go 90%+ on the Clinton, but I wouldn't give Bush right now over. I give Bush less than 50% shot.
No. I mean, we stated this last week. I don't want to reiterate too much, but I'm being flip saying it's going to be Bush versus Clinton. It's going to be Bush versus Clinton. And I think if I had to bet, that's what I would do. But Bush's lead is not like Clinton's lead by any means. Like if you wanted to bet on the Democratic nomination, like you said, 90, 95, you even said 98% on Clinton.
Yeah.
If you were going to put odds on Bush, you're talking 25, 30% maybe. as your odds. Now everybody else's is a little bit lower, perhaps. And I might go up to 40% on Bush at this point. Like, but just because of the institutional momentum and he's raising lots of money, those kinds of things. But that's a far cry from saying it's a done deal. You know, it's still lots of things could happen on the Republican side. Okay, I think we had enough election 2016. Let's take a break, and then Yvonne will take us to school and teach us about what's going on in Greece. We'll be back right after this. This is Sam here with an opportunity for you. Yes, you heard me right, an opportunity. For you loyal listeners of Curmudgeon's Corner, you know, every once in a while, Yvonne can't make a show. And I do a solo show, which, you know, I think I do okay. But, you know, it's always interesting to have a second person to bounce off. And just in general, sometimes it's good to hear another voice. If you, yes, you, have some things to say about the kinds of things we usually talk about on Curmudgeon's Corner, you know, politics, current events, news, tech, then drop me a line at abelsmay@abelsmay.com letting me know. And hey, I'll keep you in mind and maybe ask if you can join us sometime, either on a regular show with Yvonne if it's something particularly pressing that you maybe have an expertise on, or just, you know, hey, an opportunity to co-host when Yvonne is out. Who knows? Now, I am not guaranteeing that if you send me an email, you'll definitely get on the show, but let me know if you're interested and I'll keep you in mind. Thanks, and now, back to the show. Okay, here we are, Yvonne. So,
well, here's the biggest thing.
Greece has been in chaos for like over a year, and every time we talk about it, you're like, oh, don't worry about it. They'll come, they'll make a deal. It'll be fine. Has any of that changed?
Well, they are sure as hell testing the brink a hell of a lot more than they have before.
So the bottom line here is
here's the biggest problem.
The fundamental summary here is Greece owes a whole lot of money to the rest of the EU and others, I guess. And it looks like they're going to be unable to pay.
Than that. Look, they've got here's the biggest problem. Look, they owe a lot of money to a lot of people. They had a bailout that was in part like the IMF had funded it. And the bailout requires certain conditions to be met in order for certain funds to be released. They need those funds in order to meet certain debt payments that they've got. Okay, it's very simple. Okay, so they gave you, look, do this, this, and this. We are going to give you money, and that money will enable you to cover cover certain payments. Okay, now, you know, the Greeks didn't like any of those conditions because a lot of those conditions included budget cuts and austerity, which has been the whole word in Europe, and a lot of people didn't like these. Now, the biggest problem has been ever since this government has come into power, there's been a run on the Greek banks. It's a big-ass run to the tune of, like, people have pulled out – I think the number was close to $150 billion in cash out of banks in the last 6 months. Okay, they are all fearing
and accelerating in like the last week, right?
Yes, and it's accelerated substantially. So they're all fearing that either Greece is going to wind up kicked out of the euro, or they're going to default and the banks are going to close because they're not going to have any money. And there's been precedent in the EU for something like this happening. This happened in Cyprus. Okay, Cyprus was in the EU a couple of years back. There was a bank run and the banks were closed and people's funds were frozen for a substantial period of time. Now, they weren't kicked out of the euro, so they were able to get their money back, but there was they had, you know, significant difficulty in accessing their funds. Okay, the banks in Greece have reached the limit of how much money they could really return to customers that want their money immediately, okay? And they have been getting loans from the European Central Bank in order to be able to give money back. Because the other liquid assets that most banks have, or the other assets, usually are loans. Well, you can't turn a loan into cash that quickly. So the only thing that they're doing is they're taking the damn loans, they're going to the European Central Bank and say, listen, I have this loan, I need to borrow money against the loan. European Central Bank gives them cash, they're able to return your money, okay? Is that a simple enough explanation?
Okay,
that makes sense? Okay? So the problem is that this facility for the European Central Bank to give money to the Greek banks is at the discretion of the European Central Bank. They could basically cut it off at any time. Okay? And because the Greeks are basically running out of things to basically – the banks are running out of money to borrow against, there may be a certain point where the ECB just goes – the European Central Bank goes and says, fuck you, we're not going to give you any more money. And if that happens, well, then the banks have to shut down because they got no money, which would, you know, precipitate quite a much bigger crisis in Greece. You know, as of now, there's still no deal. The debt payment that they're talking about is due on the 31st. European leaders are holding an emergency summit. But they still, you know, they have really, there's been an escalation of rhetoric that keeps happening. Like right now, their rhetoric has gotten to much higher levels than it's ever gotten ever since this crisis really started. I said this a couple of years ago that I thought that the easiest solutions for the Greek economy was to pull out of the euro. I know that it would be massively painful for everybody in Greece to a certain extent, but in the end, getting – look, Greece owes so much damn money that the only way to get out of it is basically almost by printing money. Now, the problem is, of course, that I think they've borrowed a lot of this money in euros, so if you start printing money in a devalued currency, then you're just going to have to – it's just going to turn crazy. Look, unless they can get their economy growing and they can make some of these cuts, they're fucked. I mean, this is just crisis to the next crisis to the next crisis at this point.
So let me ask you the question I usually do on this. You know, if you don't live in Greece, why should you care?
If you don't live in Greece, why should you care? It's going to be a drag on the world economy. There's a lot of people that look, you may not be directly loaning money to Greece, but I'm sure that an institution you do business somehow is going to be impacted by the fact that, you know, Greece goes down and other people are going to lose money. And when they lose money, then they start, you know, taking their liquid assets and they have to use that to cover other things. So therefore, your access to funds, your access to certain things or economies will be diminished. So there is always a residual impact of such a big something that big. Now, look, we've had countries default. I think that a lot of, you know, this wouldn't be the first country to ever go into default. Not even the, you know, not even the biggest country to go into default. We had Russia go into a default like 15, 17 years ago. We've had Argentina go into default. We've had, I think it was 30 years ago, Brazil defaulted. You know, so we've had a lot of big countries go into default. I think the problem right now is the fact that Greece is now inside this eurozone and they use the euro. And I guess this hasn't happened really with anybody of this size and scale inside the eurozone, and people are just more scared of just not knowing what the hell could be the consequences. You know, in a lot of these other instances, like I mentioned, when Russia and Argentina, look, we had a residual impact because it did impact the world economy negatively, but was it a catastrophic thing, say, like Lehman Brothers? No. I will say that Lehman Brothers had more impact on the global economy than Greece in real terms. So, you know, I just think that it's the uncertainty. I really do. And I'm uncertain about it. I mean, I can't. It's
you're not going to come right out and predict like you have every other time that they'll make a deal in the end. They're not going to default.
They are going to make a deal in.
They're
the
not
end.
Leaving but, the euro.
I don't think I think they are going to make a deal in the end. But what I'm saying on the other hand is that I remember before Lehman Brothers collapsed, I didn't think that the failure of a bank like that could really almost like threaten to frickin' bring down our entire banking system. And then I realized that, fuck yeah, it could. I am going to say that I don't think that Greece defaulting on their debt could trigger such a catastrophic thing as what as something like what Lehman Brothers did. But I think that just the fear, uncertainty, and doubt about it is just enough to make a lot of people nervous. And until it happens, or a deal or not, people are just scared right now. That's just it. I mean, there's just nothing else. It's more fear than anything else. So, but we'll know soon enough. Look, the deadline is the first. So we've got right now less than a week to go on this thing.
Okay? But the worst case scenario, Greece defaults, leaves the euro, blah, blah, blah. We're still not all spiraling into a global depression or anything.
I don't think so. I really don't think so. No.
Oh, well. In that case, who cares? I'm kidding.
I think the Greeks will.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Yes.
It's very painful, especially, you know, when you get like the situation.
The Greeks are going to hurt no matter what, right?
Oh, the Greeks are, look, you know, restricted, you know, you can't access your funds in the bank. You know, restrictions on your ATM withdrawals. Hell, they're putting those in right now, for God's sakes.
Not to mention the kind of, you know, government cutbacks and stuff they want in order to be able to pay bills, right?
Right.
I mean, there's extensive reductions in services that are being talked about.
Pensions, the tax increases, other things. Yeah, I mean, you know, it's a mess. I tell you what,
you would not want to be living in Greece right now.
I would like to be living in Greece.
It's a nice place.
But if my money is deposited in Switzerland,
there you go. Well, I mean, look, there are worse places in the world to live than Greece.
Oh, fuck
even
yeah.
Even with all this
going
on. Oh, my
God. Even with the crisis. I mean, you know, look. I mean, we could make a hell of a bet, you know.
I have never been to Greece, but from everything I've seen, it's absolutely beautiful.
Oh, everybody I know been there is lovely. I had friends that are – I've had a lot of Greek friends and stuff. Oh, yeah. It's – as far as I can tell, it's really nice.
So here's another question. If Greece completely collapses, will it be a really awesome time to go there as a tourist?
Actually, I will tell you that the answer is probably a resounding yes. And as a matter of fact, one of the things that I heard this week is that tourism bookings are soaring, okay, right now, because prices are collapsing over there for tourism. So, yes, that is one positive thing. And I will tell you that, look, I remember that after the collapse in Argentina in the early 2000s, dude, I went down there all the time. It was so cheap. I mean, it was like brilliant. I mean, I stayed at the Four Seasons for less than $200 a night, $150 a night. It was ridiculous. Okay. I could go, listen, I would go out, invite everybody, oh, drinks on me, whatever, pop up on tab would come back. It's like $80. I'm like, really? Did I just really order all this shit? I just paid $80. Genius. I was like, beautiful. Oh, it was great. So, yes, I will say it is probably a great time to go visit Greece.
Okay. And with that, let's take a break. We'll be back and we'll do a little bit about the follow-up on Charleston and all the stuff that comes out of that. We'll be back after this.
You're in The Valley, AM 1620 and LiganAirRadio.com. This is where you'll find your favorite songs. Everybody's doing a brand new dance now. Classic music for a classic American town, AM 1620, and in stereo at LiganAirRadio.com, The Valley.
Okay, here we are. After Charleston, there are sort of two main forks of what's been going on afterwards. One is the reaction of those on the right initially, and then how they've scrambled to reposition themselves over the last week in terms of, just to start out at the very beginning, well, actually, one is that. Number two, which we'll get to in a minute, is all this stuff about the Confederate flag and other Civil War imagery and things like that. But first of all, right after it happened, you had a lot of things with people, and I shouldn't say just the right. It was also the media in general. First of all, was really, really hesitant to directly outright say this was a racially motivated crime. Okay. Even on last week's show, we were talking about that. We made that clear, but a lot of media outlets were somehow feeling reluctant about that, even though all the reports were like, this guy said it outright.
It's a fucking crazy white supremacist. What the fuck else was it?
Yeah, well, so, for instance, everybody's put around this screenshot of Fox and Friends where they were talking about it, and they apparently went through a segment where they talked about it, and they never mentioned race, and it was all about attack on Christianity because it was an attack on a church. Now, I think that's sort of an isolated segment, not like Fox in general. I think Fox in general has acknowledged it, but... you've got this kind of stuff, and you've got people saying, you know, let's not rush to judgment. You've got people trying to basically, we touched on this last week, trying to psychoanalyze this guy to say, well, you know, what was going on? What made him come to this, without being able to just say, look, he's a goddamn racist and he's evil and he went out and did this and that's it. End of story. You know, and there just seems a lot of reluctance to do this, where, you know, if you switched around, you know, religions and races and all this kind of other stuff, a lot of other combinations wouldn't get that kind of benefit of the doubt. I mean, even like one of the stories I read about this was, you know, when they arrested the kid, not only didn't he like go out in some kind of gun battle or whatever, or just, you know, whatever. I mean, he apparently gave himself up fairly peacefully, but like once they arrested him, he's like, I'm hungry. And they're like, okay, we'll go to the Burger King drive-thru before we take you to jail. And they got him some Burger King. You know, do you really believe?
They got him some Burger King?
Got him some Burger King.
Oh, what the fuck is wrong with these guys?
I mean, and you could just imagine again.
I would have given a shit sandwich. Fucking Burger King, go suck it.
Meanwhile, I forget what they wanted that guy in Baltimore for that was killed.
Something ridiculous. Something ridiculous.
But you know, they ended up like killing him because they they manhandled him and they bashed him around in the back of the truck or whatever. And yeah, and really, meanwhile, this guy, you gently take him into custody and he says he's hungry, so you go grab him some Burger King before you take him to jail? Okay. So, but anyway, so you've got that sort of...
Not that we're encouraging also that this guy should have beaten the shit out of him. Oh, yeah,
no. Like, the problem isn't that they treated him well. The problem is they treat other people badly.
Right.
Like, it's actually okay that they treated him well. I think the Burger King may be a little bit over the top.
Yes.
But, you know, it's okay not to beat the shit out of him.
I mean, you gotta go out for Subway, at least, or something really crappy. I mean, come on. You got him a real hot meal. I mean, you know.
Oh, but anyway, but it was interesting seeing a lot of people in the public eye, especially on the right, you know, like I said, some other folks do, but especially on the right, trying to be very reserved and not just blame this on racism and not just say, you know, he's a racist asshole and you know, they'll acknowledge it's a tragedy, but like try to dance around that issue. And then this got magnified even further when people started talking about the Confederate flag, because, you know, almost immediately, people were pointing out, like, South Carolina put all their flags at half-mast, except the Confederate flag on the grounds did not go to half-mast. And then,
gotta be shitting me. I didn't realize that part. I know I heard all the calls about getting flag, but I didn't realize that they didn't take the Confederate flag down to half-staff.
They did not.
What a bunch of douchebags.
Anyway, whether or not I'm pretty sure they didn't. I saw lots of pictures of it not going to half staff. But let's say they did. Anyway, people were using that as an opportunity to bring up the fact that, you know, hey, the Confederate flag is still flying in South Carolina. And okay, this guy, his jacket had like South African Rhodesia, not the Confederate flag. But the Confederate flag is widely seen as a symbol of racism and oppression and whatever. And let's get rid of the flag. And so then, of course, people started playing gotcha with Republican candidates about this and saying, what do you think about the Confederate flag and should South Carolina take it down? And, you know, it took a while for most to answer. And a couple folks came out and said, yes, take it down. But more interesting were the ones that were sort of very hesitant, in like several. And I wish that somebody ran a summary of what all the candidates said, and I was stupid and didn't bring it up beforehand. But a number were, you know, answered questions based on state rights. Christie was the one who gave the most extensive comments on this, gave a rationale that basically, like, the fundamental argument is this is South Carolina's business. We shouldn't tell South Carolina what to do with their symbols. It's no business of a presidential candidate to even weigh in on this issue. It's a local issue. Leave it up to them. Okay. On the one hand, yes, it is a South Carolina issue. But on the other hand,
I'm asking your opinion. I mean, I'm not asking you to, like, tell me what law you're going to pass, jerk off. I mean, and you know, he just, you know, passed the buck. I mean, it's like the question, like, so I'm asking you a question. Hey, what do you like more, cigarettes or alcohol? Whatever, you know, like, oh, well, I don't think it's my place to go and, like, give an opinion in terms of, like, that's not what I asked you, asshole. Do you think it should be up, yes or no? Screw the law right now.
Well, and also I'll say, you know, one of the things that it's theoretically part of the job of a president of the United States, as it has developed historically, is to provide moral leadership, let's say, and to actually, yes, say this is the direction I think the country should go, and not necessarily mandate that of everybody, but to provide that leadership. And those kinds of answers of it's not my place, it's up to the state, while technically, okay, they might be true. But as a presidential candidate, I'd say actually no. You are your opinion on issues like this actually is relevant and is important. And I don't think Huckabee would be saying the same thing if let's say we were talking about abortion or school prayer or any number of other issues that are potentially important to him. He wouldn't be like, that's a state issue, so I'm not going to talk about it at all. No, he'd be giving an opinion. He'd be saying that, or gay marriage, or legalization of marijuana. He'd be saying, yes, I think it's I think he probably has said that he thinks Colorado's made a mistake or whatever. And so I think it's one of those, it exactly is a cop out. Even if you believe wholeheartedly in federalism and it's up to the state, that doesn't mean you shouldn't be able to state your opinion on it and say, I wish South Carolina would do X, Y, Z. So a lot of Republican candidates were sort of doing various contortions to try to, on the one hand, indicate that they thought, yeah, the Confederate flag was probably bad, but at the same time not say that it should necessarily come down because they respect the fact that for some people it's about tradition and heritage and blah, blah, blah. And they're trying to, like, weave this course. And Nikki Haley, the governor of South Carolina, rescued all of their asses. And came and said, and she's a Republican, and said, yes, it's time for the flag to come down. Let's see what we can do about that. And even Walker, for instance, is one of the ones who initially said something about states' rights and that it was South Carolina's decision. After Nikki Haley said that, he came back and said, well, I was giving space for Nikki Haley to make a decision and do what she wanted to do there because I didn't think it was my place. But now that she has said it, I can say that I agree with her. It's like, really, what a profile and courage there.
I'll let somebody else go a step forward first, and then if they do and volunteer, then I'll just neatly hide right behind them.
It became fairly clear that this was going to be one of those issues where if you were on the wrong side of the issue, you would look really bad really fast. And while it is true, and a number of people have said, look, the Republicans, don't want to alienate the racist vote. Because, whether they like it or not, And I will admit most of the Republican candidates probably don't like this, but there is a significant part of the Republican base actually is quite racist.
Yes.
And so,
no. You know, get over it. Yeah.
They want to tiptoe very carefully around these people and not alienate them, because then where all these people go? They need them to turn out to vote. And so they play these games, like, you know, and I fundamentally, you know, most of these candidates, maybe even all of them, you know, are probably not fundamentally racist themselves. They're going to say the right things. They're going to do the right things.
But they need the votes.
They need the votes. And, you know, and there may be some racist tendencies in some of them. I'm not willing to say one way or another. But, you know, but for the most part, I'll give them the benefit of the doubt. But they have to be really careful about alienating that constituency. And so there you go. So you get these people kowtowing. And one of the things that makes me, you know, even in some issues where I'm highly sympathetic with, you know, the Republican position, and there are a few. I'd say at this point I lean more liberal than I do conservative by a significant amount. And even when I say libertarian, I sort of am left libertarian, not right libertarian in my leanings. Even when I think about, you know, oh, such and such may be right on his position on taxes, or maybe he's got a good idea about trade or this or that, then I look and say, you know, but they can't say no to the racists. They can't right. say no to the people who are scared of immigrants. They the can't
immigrants,
say no,
the gay
they,
marriage, the abortion. Let's build a wall. Let's say, well, yeah, well, I know.
And they can't say no to the anti-science folks.
Oh, they yeah. The anti-science no. was the other part. Of
you,
love.
You know, and that all that stuff makes me say, I'm sorry, I can't go there. Even if I agree with you on some issues.
Which, by the way, we're getting a whole bunch of those anti-science people in the Democratic Party, too, right now on some other issues.
On vaccinations and
stuff. Vaccinations, yeah, and GMOs and other stuff and whatever.
Yeah, no, like, there have been a number of things that have come out that say a lot of those things are cross-partisan. Seems to be a little bit more in Republican, but the Democrats are not immune from it.
They're not immune from it, no.
That's the kind of thing that, you know, says, I can't go there. I can't associate myself with those positions because they have not had the moral courage to cut out the part of the party that it holds these offensive views. And so anyway, and then this morphed into the another debate on sort of, you know, well, is the flag, you know, again, that is it heritage? Is it racism? Is it whatever? And, you know, the best summary I saw is, yes, it's heritage. It's the heritage of racism. You know, even when you go back to the Civil War and people arguing, well, the Civil War wasn't about slavery. It was about states' rights. Yes, the states' rights to keep slavery. Right. The Civil War wasn't about slavery. It was economics. Yes, the economics to keep on owning people. Yes. Right. You know, it's like, on the one hand, I'm glad we're sort of having some movement here and the flags are coming down and things like that. On the other hand, I'm like, it's 2015 and we're arguing about the goddamn Civil War. It was 150 years ago.
And they lost.
And of course, you know, the people are like, it's our heritage, blah, 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 is also like,
by the way,
the other way to look lost. At it, they lost, and, you know, fundamentally, they're a bunch of traitors, right?
Yes. Yes. Agreed.
You know, now you can argue all kinds of things about that. And, you know, if the Civil War truly was completely about, states' rights and it had nothing to do with slavery. I actually, you know, reading a lot of the arguments, and I read a few years back, I read Jefferson Davis's autobiography, and he went through all the arguments for why the South had to secede. If it hadn't been about slavery and it was about cotton or something, then okay, Fine. I can see that. It was a voluntary union of states. They should have been allowed to leave. And, you know, I've even said they probably should have been allowed to leave. But then, you know, we could have gone to war with them to stop the slavery anyway.
Right.
But, you know, but yes, in the end, it was all about slavery. And they were on the wrong side in almost every possible way. And yes, I understand there were all kinds of average people who died and who didn't own slaves themselves and blah, blah, blah. You know, and I can understand. You know, look, I've got ancestors on both sides of the Civil War. And, you know, it doesn't matter. Like at this time, we should be able to directly acknowledge, even in the South. Yes, you know, my heritage, I have Confederates in my history, but you know, they were wrong and they were evil, and it was a good thing that the North won. You know, and it seems like whenever you get these kinds of conversations and you're like, I can't believe people are reluctant to say that, you know, drives me a little bit nuts. Now, the one thing, and I tweeted about this again, like from the very beginning when people are talking about the flag and the flags have to come down and people have to stop selling the flag and all kinds of retailers, about five or six major retailers have at this point said they're not selling the flag anymore. I immediately started thinking, but what about Dukes of Hazzard and the General Lee? And I'm like, how long will it take before people realize that and start talking about that too? It took about 4 days.
Well, it took about 4 days. I will say, it's funny. I was looking the other day. There's been a commercial running on TV a lot.
Yeah.
For this company called Auto Trader with the Dukes driving the General Lee.
Yeah.
And I thought, man, they're going to have to pull that ad. I realized that I looked at the ad today in detail. They never showed the Confederate flag.
Right. Well, and
not for 1 second.
And earlier today, I think it was Warner Brothers who owns the Dukes of Hazzard announced that they will no longer license the merchandising for the General Lee. So no more.
They could have the General Lee without the Confederate flag.
Well, actually, that's what they're going to do. They're going to do an orange car without the flag.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, they're no not. Flag. As far as I know, they're not going to go back and like paint it over in the reruns of the shows or the movies. But, you know, and you know,
look, no, the show is as is. I mean, you know, the show is as is.
And, okay, you know, and there's been some people who have been calling for like tearing down Confederate statues and things like that. I don't think. Yeah. Look, history is history. We can acknowledge our history.
I think it's okay to take down the statues.
Just like the flag, take them down, put them in a museum.
Exactly.
Or properly contextualize them. Like another person pointed out, like the thing with these statues is they often, you know, the little historical markers next to them are all written in a celebratory way.
Exactly.
Like if you left the statue there, but changed all the sort of educational material around it, to, you know, sort of better reflect
your history. It's kind of like why the fucking Germans didn't leave any of fucking Nazi paraphernalia up. Listen, take it all down.
Yes.
Can you go to a museum and see it and to understand what happened? Yes. But you know what? Take it from public places celebrating this shit. Take it all fucking down.
Yeah, I think that's the key thing. If you are sort of, if there's a historical place and you want to preserve it and whatever, okay, that makes a lot of sense. And you provide the historical context and people can come there and learn and blah, blah, blah. It's the celebration stuff that I think, you know, it's overdue. And I recognize there were at the anniversary of the end of the Civil War that happened a few months ago, there were I read a couple things that sort of had the history of those anniversaries and how over time they changed and how specifically towards the end of the 1800s and the first half of the 1900s, Civil War commemorations, a good part of it was actually oriented around specifically reconciliation to bring the country back together because those wounds were still fresh. You know, for the first part of that, there were still Civil War veterans everywhere. And up through the 1960s, there were still the children of Civil War veterans all over the place. I believe the last widow of a Civil War veteran didn't actually die until the 60s. You know, so these were still, you know, there were still people who had, you know, sort of living memory of people who were involved. And so there was a sort of reconciliation kind of thing going on. We're now, I think, past that. It's time to acknowledge and get over this. And one final thing, and then we really have to move on and do our lightning round. The other tendency that people sometimes have, though, is to fixate on something symbolic like the flags and say, okay, we took down all the flags. Problem solved, right? No.
Right.
Problem not solved. There's fundamental issues of systemic racism throughout our country that, yes, still endure. And this guy is proof of it. But there are all kinds of things. We've talked about the police violence. We've talked about all kinds of other things where, you know, you can show through statistics and all kinds of things that whether or not people are consciously intending it, there is still a very bad problem with racism and also sexism while we're at it in this country. And so, no, it's not problem solved. There's still lots of work to be done.
Right.
Okay, we're going to take a break. Alex isn't here, and for some reason, he has a sock on his face.
Oh, that's always very helpful.
On the floor on my face.
Yes, he's got a sock all over his face. So anyway, this is actually kind of funny looking. You guys should see it. It's like an elephant trunk, except it's a sock over his nose and mouth. Anyway, we'll take a break. We'll come back in a few minutes. Less than a few minutes with our lightning round. Back after this. Okay, my son, age 5, is actually at this very moment is being forcibly put into the bathtub against his will. So, you know, we'll go from there.
We'll probably show up wet at some point.
Yes, anyway. He probably will. So it's time for our lightning round. So all kinds of other topics that we've been saving up, myself and Yvonne, over time that aren't big enough for a whole segment on their own, or maybe some of them would be, but we didn't feel like it.
Right.
So we're going to alternate turns. Yvonne, you first. Go.
Norton sucks. I sent you a note about this.
This is the antivirus software.
Yeah, the Symantec maker of this fire, this heinous piece of software makes one for the Mac. It totally sucks. Don't ever buy it. Don't install it. Okay. Well,
and specifically, if you have a Mac, there haven't been very many things in the wild.
I know, but I was being proactively safe, okay?
And the ones that have existed, Apple has put out patches directly into the operating system to deal with them. So running antivirus software on a Mac right now is just not advised. I mean, there may come a time in the future where it's necessary.
Listen, it ran fine before, but after a couple of the last major system upgrades, it caused regular crashes, and the performance of my computer had slowed down significantly. I got a hold of Apple support. They told me flat out that it's probably that they've encountered it before, remove it, it should be fine. I did, and my computer has been up now for, this, let's see, 12 days, 11 hours, 48 minutes. Okay, great, without a crash. By the way, it's running a lot faster. Okay, so yes, you know what? Don't buy their piece of shit. It's a robbery. They're assholes. They shouldn't be having something like this up out there on the market when it sucks so bad.
What do you really think, Yvonne?
Oh,
Were you actually running the most current version and all that too?
Yes. Yes.
There you go. Okay, my turn. I saw a movie. I mentioned it last week, Pixar, or 2 weeks ago or sometime. Pixar's new movie Inside Out came out. I saw it with the whole family.
And
I liked it. A lot of the reviews have been like, this is one of the best Pixar movies ever, and maybe even the best, although most people put it at like number three or four. It was a good movie. It was fine. But I was not blown away with it like that. There were some parts of it that was slow. One thing to say right off the bat, it seemed to me like this was much more aimed at adults than it was at the kids. You know, there's some running around for the kids, of course, but like, you know, Pixar movies are usually a balance of adult and kids. Like there's a bunch of stuff for the kids, and then there's some older themes put in for the adults. I think this was more tilted towards the adults. Alex is five. It lost his interest about three quarters of the way through.
Really?
Okay. Yeah. The other thing I'll say is that it stayed way too sad for way too long. You know, there's
did it get happy at some point?
Well, the ending was, you know, it was resolved in a nice way. I mean, I would say that even the ending was kind of melancholy. It wasn't like happy, happy, joy, joy. You know, but like the middle part of the movie was just depressing as hell.
Oh, jeez.
And you know, and look, you know, Pixar has had a number of movies where the middle is, you know, has some depressing and sad parts. I mean, hell, Disney is known for it. Like
they kill a whole bunch of people in all Disney movies.
Yeah, I mean, and Disney and Pixar, of course, merge now. But like, yeah, Disney always like the main character's parents always die in Disney.
Die, movies, right?
That I will give a spoiler.
Tarzan, for example, parents die.
Which
Frozen.
Yes,
parents die. You know, like, I don't know.
It's like pretty much every Disney movie, the parents die. The parents do not die in this movie.
Oh, that's good.
And to be clear, it was a very good movie. I came out of it glad I had seen it. But I'll be honest, I came out of the movie sad. I was sad for several hours after watching this movie.
Jesus,
and I'm like,
good Lord.
Now, I'm a little sensitive. You know, and it hit on some themes that I'm sensitive to, but at the same time, I'm like, you know, I didn't want to come out of the movie depressed.
you wanted like something more happy.
Yeah, I mean, and look, the ending was fine. Like, it's not like everybody died at the end or anything like that. It does have a happy ending and you know, whatever. But it's still, the whole middle part of the movie was like, oh my God, what's happening to her? Anyway, your turn.
Oh, let's see. Oh boy, sorry people, it's like late in the East Coast. Afghanistan parliament got bombed, so I don't know if you saw some of the stuff. Like they were like in session and all of a sudden like this massive bomb went out outside, and you know, they were like freaked out inside. Like
I saw some,
you know,
of that. Yep.
Yeah. I guess you know, even though the attackers were killed, a few people have been talking about, well, this is like quite a, maybe they didn't succeed in the target, but they sure as hell, you know, freaked out a whole bunch of people and like made them look vulnerable. I guess nothing changes, you know, it's just a big thing. You know,
yeah.
I mean,
and you know, I still think like this whole region, I don't see, like, I think eventually,
every region, look, even the Northern Ireland found peace.
Yeah.
I'm saying,
I'm not saying it'll never happen. I'm saying two things.
Maybe not in our lifetime.
One, I don't know. Hopefully our lifetimes are fairly long.
Maybe in our lifetime.
But having said that, the two things I think is not anytime soon. Like you're not going to have Syria, Afghanistan, Iraq. This little area is not going to be a happy place in a long time. And two, our involvement there is not helping. You know, I don't think what we're doing there is helping.
Okay, let me just say this. I don't know if our involvement is making a difference in any direction. I got to be honest.
I think with our involvement, not just our involvement right now, this very moment, but our involvement in general over the last couple decades has only made things worse.
I think over the last couple of decades, it's made it worse. I don't know if, like, right now we're making – let's just say we pulled out entirely, didn't have a single person there. I don't think it'd make a difference.
Really?
I don't think so, no.
I think what would happen is if – and we're past time.
I think it could be worse.
Here's what I think would happen. If we pulled out entirely, 100% right now, I think in the short term, over the next 3 years – 3 to 4 years, it would get significantly worse. But then after those 3 to 4 years, after sort of everybody blew themselves up, it would get better faster. Whereas what we're doing by our presence is maybe we're not letting it get quite as bad as it would be otherwise, but we're keeping it from resolving.
God, I don't know. It's just that that's such a fucked up solution, really. Hey, let's just make it a bazillion times worse for 3 years, and then people will be tired after having blow the bejesus out of everybody, and then they'll be tired. I don't know. Anyway, all right.
Okay, my turn. On.
Yes, your
turn. I had computer problems this last week as well.
A lot worse than mine.
Well, you know, look, for a long time, my computer's been slow. It's been having issues, blah, blah, blah. We talked on last week's show. I didn't know what was up with these download speeds and what the hell was going on. So on a hunch, I'm like, well, you know, I've been thinking for a long time it might be related to my hard drive. So let me, just to see if it makes a difference, even though my hard drive has never failed any tests I've put it through, let me just try... I have a system that every day clones my whole internal hard drive to an external drive as a backup, along with several other backup strategies I have. I have multiple redundancy. So I kicked off one of those to say, you know, I'm not just going to trust the one that most recently happened. I'm going to kick off one of these. I say it's every day, but it's actually been taking more than 24 hours to complete the backup, which in and of itself maybe is a warning sign. So I kicked off the backup. I waited, you know, the 30 hours or so it took to finish. And then as soon as it finished, I booted off of the clone drive instead. My initial impressions were it's no faster than the regular drive. It's just about the same. And so I was about to just switch it back to the internal drive. But I said, you know, before I do, I'll take the advantage of the fact that I booted from an external drive to do a full disk check and repair on the original internal drive. And I did so, and it said, found problems I can't fix. And I'm like, oh, well, crap. Okay.
Super shocker.
I tried it a couple more times, and then it's like, found problems I can't fix, save everything you can, and reformat the drive. You're done. And I'm like, really? Really? I was just using this yesterday.
Yeah, but it hadn't been working well for forever.
That's true. And then I tell it, okay, I'm like, okay, fine. I'm running off my backup. My backup is working fine. I've got my, in addition to this drive, I've got a couple other backups. They're fine too. I'll go ahead and reformat the primary drive, and then I'll move everything back to it and see if it's any better, right? Then it's like, I can't even reformat the drive. I'm sorry. I can't even do that. And I'm like, well, shit. And so I'm like, okay, well, I'll run off this external drive, and that'll just have to be what I do for the time being. And maybe I'll take the computer in and have the internal drive replaced, or we'll see how it goes. This is no worse on the external drive. Maybe I'll just run off the external drive for a while and get a new backup clone drive to go there and blah, blah, blah. And I'm thinking about this stuff, and I go to bed. I wake up in the morning, and it's remounted the drive it said it couldn't do anything with the previous night. The previous day, it couldn't mount it. It couldn't reformat it. It couldn't fix it. It couldn't do anything. It was just like the drive was gone. The next morning, without me having touched anything else, it's back. And I run
obviously, it's a mechanical problem.
And I run the disk check again on it. And this time it says, the drive's fine. No problems at all.
Oh, yeah, great, woohoo. And then Sam tweets, hey, should I go back to using it?
I didn't expect anyone to say yes to that.
Okay, well, that's good.
So, you know, on the one hand, it was tempting. It's like sitting there and says it's fine. But I'm like, I don't trust you anymore.
Not particularly, no.
I do not trust you anymore. And so I'm still running on the external drive, and I bought a new backup drive for it that is actually sitting in its box right next to me right now, and I'll probably install sometime tonight and do that. Actually, replacing the internal drive, and I had some people suggest, hey, replace it with an SSD, blah, blah, blah. You'll get a big performance boost.
Yeah, they're expensive, I know.
Well, it's not just they're expensive. It's also like I have almost 2 terabytes on my boot drive, and so I'd have to reconfigure everything, and because, you know, you can't... You know, you can get a 1 terabyte SSD.
Yeah, there aren't any like multi-terabyte SSD drives yet out there.
At least not at any sort of reasonable price. Even the 1 terabyte SSDs are insanely expensive. Normal size is like 225 or 250 or something like that. And in order for me to run on that, I'd have to like figure out, I'd have to move a whole bunch more stuff onto external drives, and it would just be a major pain in the ass. So if I was going to replace the internal drive, it would probably be with a regular drive or maybe a Fusion drive or something like along those lines. If I don't know, I don't think Apple sells them standalone, but it's something like that. But even to do that, like, because I'm not willing to do the do it yourself on the inside of an iMac, so I'm like, I would have to take it somewhere and be without it several days and blah blah blah. And so I'm like, and I know I've seen the YouTube videos of how to do it. I know I've seen them. I don't want to do it.
Yeah, and it's too complicated. I don't want to do it.
Yeah. So anyway. We'll see. The bottom line is running off this external drive right now, it's actually no worse than the internal drive, which actually probably means the internal drive was a problem. It's just now it's completely balanced by the fact I'm going over a slow USB cable. So whatever. Anyway, computer fun. I spent way too much time talking about that. Do another one, Yvonne. We'll do a couple more and then we'll stop.
We got a trade deal apparently approved by the Republicans.
Well,
at least the Fast Track Authority.
Yes, the Fast Track Authority. There is no actual deal yet, but it has been approved. So if Obama negotiates a deal, it'll go straight to Congress and they just have to vote it up or down. No extensive debate, no amendments, no nothing, just take it or leave it. And so the way these things usually work is they're negotiated in such a way that saying no would be such a, you know, big deal that you basically they're forced into saying yes.
Yeah, basically, by approving the Fast Track, you virtually almost approve the deal.
And I believe that it also means they have to. Does it also require a 50 vote instead of a 60?
I forget. Yes. Yes.
So you know, basically, this is saying whatever Obama comes to them with is going to go through. Now, of course, there's still people rallying against this bill, trying to keep it from happening if that happens. But this is a huge victory for Obama, and it's one of those weird things where it's like it's basically Obama, the Republicans, and a couple Democrats.
Yes,
which is not your usual coalition at the moment.
But the Republicans are free trade guys, and you know they.
And the Democrats aren't.
And there's a lot of Democrats that aren't, other than presidents. It just seems, you know, in the last 20 or 30 years, it's like, I guess it's the popular thing. You know, it's kind of like, well, like we talked about the core issues for the Republican Party. It's one of those where I guess a lot of Democrats in Congress, they just think like if they vote for that, they're
they're
alienating their core.
And also, I have to say, they're. A lot of potentially bad things that have been reported through the leaks on this agreement that are they're very pro-business, but they're very anti-consumer, and a lot of things potentially tie the hands of, you know, they bind us to various international things that limit the ability for domestic regulations to override certain things. And it provides basically a lot of things that are specifically designed to benefit multinational companies in terms of making things more even between countries, being able to resolve disputes in certain ways, et cetera. And, you know, so there's a lot of really iffy stuff in this that has been reported through the leaks on this. Of course, one of the issues is that the full actual version of this to be determined is not public.
Correct.
And, you know, and at least according to some of the early drafts, weren't supposed to be made public, not just until Congress is ready to vote on it, but until several years after it goes into effect, which is just nuts. Like, at the very least, come on, like, you know, the whole thing should be out and public for a few weeks before Congress votes on it so that the public can weigh in on it. That seems like a bare minimum to be, you know, remotely democratic about this process, small d democratic. And it's unclear if that's going to happen or not at this point.
All right. Okay, so that was mine. So one more from you. So we could, like, oh gosh, I need to go to sleep.
one more to me. Oh, I'm torn between a couple of these. Let's go with Taylor Swift and Apple Music.
Oh, you had that one on the list. Okay. Well, so we had that. So they had that trial period that they were going to do for 90 days.
Yes.
And I guess Apple thought, and I, you know, I thought about this, and I guess I, you know, I can't believe it. They said, well, we're not going to charge people to use it. So why are we going to pay people, you know, to use it if we're not charging to use it, right?
I see where they're trying to promote a
paid platform. They're trying to move away from giving away the music for free. That's what Apple was doing. And they kind of figured, well, you know, our model is a full paid model. We're not going to have a free service. You give a free trial. I mean, come on. Look, I'm sorry, but we get free trials of, like, HBO. We get free trials of, XM satellite radio for 90 days. We get free trials.
Yeah, but there's a difference between HBO deciding to give a free trial of their service and Apple deciding to give a free trial of somebody else's music.
But it's other people's content.
You'd think Apple would still need to pay the license fees no matter what. Like, if you decide
to go play
music in a public park for free to whoever's in that park, you're still supposed to pay the license fees.
I guess I'm sure that in some meetings, a couple of people thought it made total sense.
And anyway, Taylor Swift came out with an open letter to Apple saying,
and they reversed it,
basically saying this is bullshit. She came out with this letter on a Sunday morning. By Sunday afternoon, Apple executives were getting on Twitter saying, you know, Taylor's right. We're reversing our decision.
Right. I think that, you know what? You have a whole bunch of planning meetings. You think about this. You go, whatever. Well, you know, whatever. You know, hey, we're going to be making them a lot of money. So what the heck? You know, let's give the free trial. Maybe it makes sense. I don't know.
The bottom line is, I think this probably ends up as a... Yeah, you know, in the end, here's what's going to happen. Like, if Apple's service is a success, Apple and all these artists are going to make decent money off it. Apple's service is a failure, then they're not. And whether or not they get paid in these first couple months is not going to make a significant difference.
It's not a make or break thing about it. I think Taylor Swift was making more the point that people should get paid for the music, period. You know, done.
Right.
That was her point. And it was and she made it very well.
Okay. And we're wrapping up here. I did want to, there's one other thing. We're not going to have a whole discussion on it, but I just wanted to point out that you know these government hacks that we talked about a few weeks ago where they got a hold of all of this information on basically every government employee has had personal information leaked, and specifically anybody who's had a security clearance since like 1970 or something has had the information that was involved in their clearance process leaked, which is kind of significant information. But the one note I wanted to say is in this last week, at one of the, I forget if it was one of the congressional hearings or whatever, where somebody was being asked about this, and I wish I had the specific citation in front of me. I don't. But the quote really stood out to me because they were asking why they didn't use encryptions on some of these systems. And did you hear what the answer was? Because some of these systems were not encrypted at all.
And what was the answer?
The answer was, well, some of these systems we couldn't encrypt because there are no encryption facilities available for these systems. And why would that be, you ask?
Yours are so old?
Because their systems written in COBOL in the 1970s or Fortran still running on these damn systems that haven't been touched or updated in 20 or 30 years.
Well, let me just say this. You can't encrypt that. Okay, I just think that they're idiots, and they probably didn't have people with enough knowledge to be able
to encrypt those databases. You would have to write some of that stuff from scratch, because apparently, like, nobody, like, modern encryption libraries aren't written for these old languages right now. You're absolutely right. Someone could do that.
but they didn't have the resources.
They didn't have the resources, and even the fact that, like, you know, and there was another story in the news. The Pentagon is apparently paying Microsoft a shitload of money to continue using a whole bunch of Windows XP systems, even though Microsoft is not officially supporting them anymore. So they're paying all kinds of extra money so that Microsoft will keep some people on staff specifically to deal with these Windows XP systems. And it's like, really, guys? Okay, look, you can't deal with technology this way. And we talked about this with the Hillary Clinton email and everything else. The situation, every time something new comes up here, it's worse than I thought it was before. And I knew it was bad to start with. I knew the government was really slow on these.
We were talking about federal IT, how being really sucky. You remember?
I mean, federal IT has always been sucky, but like,
I had to go recently to the Social Security Administration to fill out some paperwork regarding to my family, and I remember that I got this printout back, and I realized, I looked at it, my God, this thing is like an IBM AS400 or something like this, or Z mainframe or something.
It's on the green and white paper with the little holes on the side.
It came out on a laser printer, two-sided. They did move to that, but you could see that it was like on, on Courier.
Yeah.
You know, you can see where the hell this output came from.
It's like, on the one hand, you know, where you feel like the federal government is spending way too much money, and we've got the deficit, and we've got all this other stuff, and a huge federal debt. And on the other hand, it's like, okay, but at the same time, you can't upgrade your computers to something less than 10 years old.
Those systems, let me tell you something. Listen, those systems work very well. So
I'm not going to get
with that. But that's not what concerns me. What concerns me is the point that, I'm sorry, you know what? There's a lot of companies that have those kinds of systems still up and running in a lot of places, and they have people that can actually fucking maintain them.
Mm. Those people are dying out.
Oh, yeah, what the hell? You know, like I said the other day, you know, that's why I got my old terminal window.
No, I know. Look, but this is significant information here. This is like, you know, you expect...
It was easily migratable to a more modern system.
And more modern is not always better. You're right. There are certain of these systems that are rock solid, and there's a good reason to leave them all alone.
I lived through this in a couple of jobs where we migrated from old mainframe stuff to fucking SAP. And let me tell you something. SAP compared to that old shit sucks. Okay, that old shit worked better than fucking SAP. So, you know.
And there are a lot of, if you've got a simple system and it works in a rock solid way, there's a good argument for not touching it. But at the same time, you got to be paying close attention to this stuff. And of all the places the government could be spending money, for God's sake, don't be running 30-year-old computer systems unless there's a damn good reason to, and you've made sure that they're up to modern standards of security and other things. I mean, this is just ridiculous. I mean, this particular leak has national security implications. It has privacy implications. It has it's awful. You kind of expect this of Joe Bob random private company, but, you know, come on. And I guess, yes, you expect this about the federal government, too. They screw up everything. It is not uncommon for the federal government to screw stuff up. But you would hope that they could do a little bit better on this stuff. Anyway, I saw the reference of Fortran and COBOL, and I was like, whatever. Anyway.
All right. We're done.
Thank you for joining us for yet another Curmudgeon's Corner that we have let go on for way too long.
Oh, my God, yes.
And I'm sure it's my fault. It usually is. thank you for joining us. We appreciate your listening. Go to our Facebook page. We're at Curmudgeon's Corner on Facebook. Comment there. Tell your friends to listen. Share us. All of that kind of stuff. As usual, also available on Twitter. I'm at Abelsme. Yvonne is at I am Bo. Abelsme is spelled A-B-U-L-S-M-E. Also, I'm available at just on email. If you don't like social media, abelsme@abelsme.com. We love to hear from you. But if you like our page on Facebook, you know, keep listening to the episodes too. That's always good. Thank you for joining us. Have a good week, everybody. Talk to you next time. Goodbye.
Bye.